a play of mine that was performed back on December 3rd, 1996. And this is for Jeremy and Deborah. And here we go. Today, December 3rd. And we've decided to put on a little play for you. This is a part of a larger work in progress that we're doing, and this is the first time we've ever shown this to any audience at all. And so there's a lot of things that we're still working on with it. It again is a work in progress. We're called SIT. This is Jeremy Bate. This is Deborah Taylor. I'm Bennett Tyson. And the name of our play is A Rain of Fish. A Rain of Fish.
Act 1.
As if we build
on cue, Act 1.
As if we see.
As if on cue we see.
A line passed us before we noticed.
But we see that
street corner scene.
Act 2.
A man in white shoes.
Man in white shoes.
And a man with a low umbrella.
Low umbrella.
A postman with a bag.
A girl with her hair tied in a bun,
faded jeans,
sweatshirt,
and big bag.
Two women in red and black coats with one umbrella and bags.
A woman with a red cap.
And then nothing. As if on cue,
it is a red
brick wall. As if it were a scene.
Act 1. As if on cue,
we see that street
corner scene, and there's nothing, but the shadow of a taxi.
Shadow.
A bicycle.
And a police car.
Black man in white wool hat.
Bald white man in a business suit.
As if on cue, we see the red wall.
Act 3.
All right. In Lucerne, 2 decades ago, an unfortunate mishap occurred to an oculist. He fell, simultaneously with a pane of glass. In the crash that followed, a minuscule shard of glass was embedded in his right eyeball. Now, the eye is the most sensitive organ in the human body, so imagine the pain he must have felt, poor guy. No operation would have been able to remove the offending splinter without rendering the man blind. But once he recovered from the initial shock, what a discovery. He not only could see colors beyond the spectrum of human sight, but he became vividly aware of synchronous, non-local correlations of previously unrelated photons on opposite ends of the universe. The world, the universe, the multiplex multiverse of infinite probabilities opened itself like a billion-petaled lotus before his wounded sight in a hyper-conscious display of all infinity, of all realities, from beginningless time to endless infinity and back again, in a revolving sphere of impermanence and an endless cycle of death and rebirth in perpetuity. The story concludes that after a few months of this transcendent vision, another accident befell this poor guy. He fell down again. This time the splinter got knocked out of his eye. And he immediately went insane when his normal human vision was restored to him. Of course, I heard this from some guy I knew. He said he heard it from the oculist himself.
Now I see. This is like that old TV show I saw once.
When we awaken at a certain point in our sleep rhythms, we have memories of what was passing through our consciousness, images, details, whatever, as we freely associate with what most likely was a series or a jumble of related impressions, we construct, usually non-rationally, a story, situation, or narrative which stays with us longer than the actual impressions themselves. In other words, we interpret, and we call that a dream.
What's crossing my mind right now is I got my cousin Bill's Thunderbird about a quarter of a mile from here completely upside down in water and marsh mud. And in the trunk there are $5,000 worth of hot fireworks that I was running back to the city as a favor for Big George. And like, I'm really wrecked at the moment. And there's no phone here, and I think I better go lie down.
Everything that happens happens for a reason, doesn't it? According to Life magazine, on March 26, 1948, green rain fell on Dayton, Ohio. It stained the streets for several days afterwards. It was a media event at the time. A black rain fell over a 400-square-mile area of Ireland on May 14, 1849. This was reported in the Annals of Scientific Discovery in 1850 and in the Annual Register in 1849. The rain was the color of ink. It had a fetid odor and a disagreeable taste. According to the Annales de Chimie in 1885, thick, viscous red matter fell out of the sky onto Ulm in 1812. According to the Yearbook of Facts in 1861 at Siena, Spain, on December 28, 1860, at 7 a.m., red rain began to fall from the sky. It fell for 2 hours. There was a second shower 2 hours later at 11 a.m. 3 days later, there was another shower, and again the day after that. The red rain was examined and claimed to be made up of thousands of organic corpuscles. In 1863 in Virginia, tobacco growers reported mass quantities of blood and flesh had fallen over growing tobacco fields. However, 2 days later, here's good news, it emerged that this was merely a hoax perpetrated by Negroes. In 1859, according to the Monthly Weather Review in the UK, near Mountain Ash, Pennsylvania, thousands of living fish poured from the sky. They were minnow and stickleback. The London Times, 10 March 1859, the roofs of houses were covered with them. Report of the British Association, 1859, the evidence of the fall of fish on this occasion was very conclusive. In Nature, September 19th, 1918 issue, on August 24th of that year, hundreds of small sand eels had dropped out of the sky at Hindon, a suburb of Sunderland in the UK. They fell in an area of 60 by 30 yards as though dropped from a single point in the sky. The fish were dead and stiff. There was a shower of frogs the size of nickels in Arkansas on 2nd January 1973. A downpour of frogs or toads in a heavy rainstorm, according to the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, on January 6, 1959. Nellie Straw of the Sheffield in UK, in October 1995, called the BBC program Schofield's Quest to state that she had been driving on the A82 into Glencoe in a terrible storm when hundreds of frogs began to fall from the sky. There was a shower of rats in Norway in the 1950s. Thousands of foot-long snakes fell out of the sky in Memphis in January 1967. You are comfortable, aren't you? It's odd to see someone out here that you don't know, mister. Don't get many strangers dropping in out here. It's odd to see someone you don't know, someone new. I'm your host. You can call me Charmy. Where was I? I have so many things here that have fallen out of the sky that if I told you all of them, it wouldn't make any difference anymore. Have you ever pondered the etymology of the word explain? Ex, as in out of. Plain, as in flat, smooth, clear, plain. An explanation, then, makes everything smooth.
In the first scene, we are in the house in the swamp. Tom arrives and pounds on the front door calling for help, but no one answers. Inside, he examines himself in a mirror and collapses on the couch. Valerie finds him. She says, "Look what the storm drove in." Tom is obviously worried about what's happened to him. He is in shock somewhat. He's overturned his car in the storm, and he finds himself entranced by Valerie. There is more knocking outside. Someone else has arrived. And as Valerie starts to go to the door, Charlie enters. Valerie introduces him as her father and continues out to see who's at the door. Charlie sits in his chair and looks over Tom. Tom explains what has happened and asks if he could call a garage to get his car fixed if possible. Charlie tells him there's no phone. And Valerie re-enters with Linda, whose car had also overturned and had run into Tom's car. Linda is quite young.
Cool scene.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
One, two, three, the storm.
My knees buckle at the suddenness.
Yes, it came up fast.
Face it, I see her. She's tall, thin, cold black hair over shoulders. I see her face.
Don't leave again.
One, two, three, the storm.
My knees buckle at the suddenness.
Yes, it came up fast.
Face it, I see her. She's tall, thin, coal black hair over her shoulders. I see her face.
Don't leave again.
One, two, three, the storm.
My knees buckle at the suddenness.
Yes, it came up fast.
Face it, I see her. She's tall, thin, coal black hair over shoulders. I see her face.
Don't leave.
I see an easy chair and have an easy time getting into it. My pants are wet, socks soaked. My face feels funny, bruised. What's happened? Chair, good. My eye, left eye, swollen. A hand on my brow, dry and cold.
My, you are a mess.
I open my mouth to say something. A tooth is broken,
okay? Let me see your eye. I think I can take care of this. Now, where's
your
car?
Your car, Valerie, in white. Valerie in the fever, white.
Can't you speak? How'd you get here? It's a storm. I knew it. It's a storm for sure.
A rain of fish.
Okay, you're going to be all right. You're not bleeding badly. You're just shook up.
I know. My hand slides up her waist.
Coming to life now, eh?
Notice. Dance, painting,
music, mumbling a few words to collect himself, concluding with, where am I?
Don't you know? You're the one that just came out of nowhere in the middle of the night and pounded on the door, not me.
In the grass,
you look dizzy, but the bleeding seems to have stopped. You still feel cold,
though the car, yes?
Well, what I'd like to know is, what were you doing out here? There's nothing out here. The nearest town's 29 miles through the swamp, even longer by the road. The road always washes out this time of year, huh? What were you doing out here?
Wait a minute!
Remember itself. They see the sin in it. That's why. Seat of badgers. Charm of goldfinches. Cloud of gnats. Cloud of cats. Clutch of chicks. Clutter of cats. Colony of ants. Congregation of plovers. Covey of quail. Knot of toads, leap of leopards, leash of greyhounds, litter of pigs, mob of kangaroos, murder of crows, muster of peacocks, mute of hounds.
My head's pounding, that's the door!
Somewhere else, we see a young woman waking up. She takes her pulse, she pulls on a dress, she's crying. Her tears are red.
Valerie says, I'll get that, and walks over here.
Here, Charlie appears, steps inside, has raincoat, coming in out of the storm, doesn't notice me for a bit,
then does. Whoever you are, you must get away from here as fast as you can.
What? Your life
is in danger. What are you talking about? My daughter let you in, right?
I let myself in.
Then has she seen you yet?
Yes, she's just gone to the door.
You
look, will you?
You don't understand. My daughter is a succubus. She is a
vampire! Hot scene. Go.
The house in the swamp. Almost midnight. A solitary light bulb swings gently back and forth in the center of the room.
Shadows spin across the mossy walls, and dim light reveals a gloomy sitting room with an ancient green couch center.
One has a sense of a place situated out of time, long undisturbed and dust settled.
There is a sudden knocking on the old oak door at the end of the hallway leading outside.
A pounding sound that is slow and a bit weak.
Tom's voice calls out, "Hello? Please?"
Pause for a few seconds.
And the pounding begins again.
This time stronger. Then...
silence.
An unseen knob turns. The sound of a creaking door.
Tom enters, disheveled, bleeding gash on forehead. He's a still young man of 30, say.
He's walking with a wobble in his legs. His clothes are soaked to the skin with his shirt ripped.
He seems ready to collapse and falls back against the wall, arm groping, trying to keep standing.
He says to himself, calmly,
"Open. It's open. At least it's open, at least." And he says to the house,
"Hello? Is there anybody here?"
It is only now that we hear a roll of thunder and are aware of the fierce thunderstorm raging outside, the sound of rain splashing into metal gutters, the roar of a downpour. It's raining cats and dogs, and toads, probably. Let's say that this storm is the last gasp of a Gulf Coast hurricane raging inland.
Why are these lights on if no one's home?
He sees a mirror by the bookcase and examines his reflection, tentatively pressing his fingers to the cut on his forehead.
That doesn't look good.
A chill comes over him and he flushes, twisting and shivering for an instant. Blackout. Flash of lightning. Negative after image on our retinas.
Now it's dark.
Anybody? My apologies, being wet and all. I'm sure I don't mean to get your dirty sofa wet, but I can't help it, you know? I'll just lie here a few minutes, I swear. The storm will break soon, and I've got to get to a phone. Maybe I could use the phone here? Well, later.
Loud thunder crack and blackout.
Oh, shit.
Lights back up.
Oh, my God. I think I'm in love.
Lights back up.
Oh, my God, I think I'm in love.
Huh?
My heart just skipped a beat.
Huh?
I have never felt like this before.
Oh, lady, I hope I didn't startle you.
Oh, my God.
I know it's not right to just break in your house.
Look at you.
I had a legitimate reason, believe me. And the door was open.
Oh, don't try to move. You'll hurt yourself.
Well, I had to get out of the...
Look! I said don't move, and I meant it.
Maybe you're right.
You poor dear. Whatever happened to you?
Somehow, I got off the main highway in the storm. I thought I was on a frontage access road. But then I couldn't find an entry ramp.
That's terrible.
And then all of a sudden, the road ended. There was just this river on one side and a bayou on the other. I couldn't see a thing. I got out of the car and tried to look around. It was raining like it was the end of the world or something. I've never seen it rain like that before. I found another, well, it looked like it was a road cut through the deep woods. I got the car turned around and started driving again, but I couldn't see. And the road started to go downhill, and then there was this big white cord all the way across the road.
You look like you've been in a fight with a werewolf.
I hit the cord and the car flipped over.
Claw marks on your brow.
I guess I was thrown clear in the mud.
And you're all wet, too.
Lady, I don't know how I got out okay, but...
Any other fresh wounds on that precious body?
Lady, I've got to get some help.
Show you bruise, beauty. I feel called upon to assist you in your unfortunate plight. I'll nurse you back to proper health, bathe you, make you comfortable, feed you deviled eggs.
Lady, my car, not my car, my uncle's car, is out there in that storm, lying on its side, and I've got to get some help.
You foolish, beautiful, pure young man, allow me to help you.
Okay. Let me get myself upright. Oh, my head. I need to use your telephone.
What a beautiful face you have.
Lady, please.
And so serious, too.
Lady!
And polite! Oh, but what a savage wound there is on your brow. It's unquestionably the best I've seen in the longest time.
Valerie, dear, what's all the excitement?
Daddy, look what the storm drove in.
Well, I'll be damned.
I just came from downstairs and there he was.
Ah, stranger, it's a good thing we keep our door open, isn't it? In case of emergencies such as this.
Oh, I'm grateful.
Oh, he's very polite.
My car, the storm,
this
phone...
This is a major responsibility, Valerie.
Oh, I know, Daddy, I'm up to it.
Okay, that's a good girl. You go upstairs, get some towels and some bandages and some dry clothes. They're clean clothes in the hamper.
I know, Daddy. Now, mister, you just rest here. Don't try to get up, and I'll be back in a few minutes.
You'll have to be patient with Valerie. She doesn't see many young men out here, you know.
Look, I'm pretty groggy right this second, but there are some things in my car that have to be...
Don't you hear the storm?
Of course I hear the storm. I was lost in it.
The roam of the old potato wagon. Streaks of lightning. Wildly cataclysmic.
Please listen. In the trunk of my car...
You're in no shape to go outside right now, and that storm's a real monster.
In my trunk are... volatile.
Why, when there's storms like this, you'd never catch me outside. No, I'm inside where it's dry and warm.
Any second now, they might go off.
Uh-huh. Valerie and I have lived out here for many, many years now. Though you couldn't tell that from looking at us. I guess I should tell you what I do out here. I am some kind of a scientist. I have a laboratory down in the cellar, and you know what else I have? A study upstairs. And you know what else? I've got 2,216 shoeboxes upstairs, too. I collect. No, not shoeboxes, but what I keep inside them. Clippings. Notations of essential pieces of obscure data that have been willfully ignored by the self-appointed establishment order. Research that has spanned over 200 years of newspapers and nature journals. Don't get it, do you? I collect natural and scientific observations of unusual phenomena that cannot coexist successfully with rational thought. This study has been, shall we say, obsessive in its detail. Me, what I'm most interested in is what falls out of the sky, the realm of the curious cloudburst, to seek immortality by looking up into the sky, to be one for once with the immensity of the sky. I've never seen anything fall out of the sky. Oh, how I've wanted to. To have these mere, apparently mortal eyes connect with the substance from beyond this world. Why, it's all I ever dream of. You must learn... Oh, excuse me. What is your name, please? So we may have something to call you.
Tom. I'm Tom from Brooklyn.
Oh, Tom, good enough. Tom, I'm wise enough to know that I have saddled myself with delusion... No. That's not what's bothering me. I really do think under control, I've got it under control. This lying thing. I think I've got a handle on it, I really do. There are things, once again, there are things that I've lied about to her, for example. And then I'd lie about my lies. I really do think there's no rhyme or reason or rhyme for it. I go to tell her something. I go to tell and tell her. And what should come out and what does come out, I tell her, and they're two different things. I know it's a lie. I know it's a lie. It's a lie, I know, and two different things. Don't know why I lie. And then when I get caught, at it, I find a lie to cover up my lies, and it's really out of hand, but I don't believe it's a problem right now, because I'm working solidly on this one thing. I am working on it. I am telling the truth, no matter how much it hurts.
Here we are, how are you feeling?
Why, old Tom's just fine.
Tom, is that your name?
Yeah.
Tom was just telling me how once he saw a flying saucer.
Really? Well, don't get too excited now. More white than red seen. I want you to stay alive long enough to hear my dream.
Does that mean that now the air is tinged with violets, a sweet red fragrance?
Hush now, Daddy, you'll spoil it. You were in my dream. And you? And why even you? Let me tell it in the present tense. You know how some things that happen to you are so real they're like a dream? Well, this dream was so real it was like a play. I've been told that I have to see this movie, so I've made my way to this tiny basement club. Cracked plaster, pipes in the ceiling. There's a crowd. The place is thick with smoke. I'm stepping over bulky, long-haired, bearded men going to a single seat in the corner. Ridiculously small round table. Can't even put my elbow on it. A basic drone of hardcore music, a real primal atmosphere seat on an inadequate sound system. I'm smoking a cigarette real quiet in the corner, all pulled into myself, knees together, kind of looking around at the posters of lobsters and marijuana plants on the walls. I remember a little man in thick glasses with a mohawk reading a list of upcoming films. And the titles, they pull on me. They draw me in. Cannibals in the Streets. Invasion of the Blood Farmers. Blood Orgy of the She-Devils. Shriek of the Mutilated. I Dismember Mama. Breakfast at the Morgue. Barn of the Naked Dead. And then the lights go out. There aren't even any exit lights. The title, Last Act on the Left. And you gotta see I'm in two places at once. I'm inside the movie, and I'm sitting in my seat. I'm pulling on a menthol cigarette, and I'm touching the smashed rainbow of the film. In the debris, I'm existing somewhere between the Project Ed and the Project Shun. Do you follow? I don't want to make this too difficult when it's easy, see? There's nothing to smooth over.
I'd have never guessed from the outside that this place was so big.
It's adjustable. Special imaginary levers control the depth and breadth of this space so that it can become whatever size I wish it to become.
That's freaky.
This is my laboratory. Here are my beakers and test tubes, and here is my Bunsen burner. But now, look, here.
Remember Linda? She came in out of the storm a long time ago, but now she's in the movie. I have this voice inside me that tells me things. She's the one, she's the one. There's a gap now. I'm back in the basement watching this film. I feel funny. The seat's not right. My pants don't fit. I'm shifting around in my seat. My stomach twists, my lungs fill with breath. And there's Linda beside me on the screen. We've left you two talking about laboratories and observation. Linda's clothes were all wet, so I've given her a big sweater to wear. I've taken all her clothes and hung them up to dry in the bathroom. So there she is in this fisherman knit sweater. It's long, but not too long. The sleeves have to be rolled up over her arms, but it falls to just below her bottom. Oh, and her hair's wet too, wrapped in a towel turban. So we're going up the stairs in slow motion. She's looking back at me over her shoulder. Such big doe eyes. My head feels light, and there's a whooshing in my ears. Her lips are moving, but I hear no words. She winks at me once, and suddenly I find my eyes moving across her body the way I felt men's eyes move across me. I try to concentrate on her moving mouth, but again, I hear nothing. My eyes follow the length of her sweater until they rest on the flesh of her naked thighs. And suddenly she trips, and I'm reaching out to catch her. I scoop her up in my arms, and her weight throws me off balance, too, and we plop down on the stairs, and we're face to face, and my arms around her waist, and one of her hands on my shoulders, and my face is so close to her, I could kiss her, and she whispers, "You weren't listening, were you?"
This is my life's work. Now, this is what I want you to do, Tom. Lean all the way back in the chair now. Relax your neck. You're stiff as a board. Okay, I'm going to put a few drops of this solution into your eyes. Don't worry, it won't hurt.
What's it gonna do? My eyes are all right. Nothing wrong with them.
Nothing wrong with them. Nothing wrong with them. As Blake said, the eye altering alters all.
It was all of a sudden just like getting hit right in the eye with a beam of light, like somebody using a flashlight on stage. I turned out on the screen, and looking right at me where I was sitting, closed in, our two sets of eyes meeting mine and mine, and from where I was sitting, I could see on the screen that I had fangs. And there was the coldest, hungriest, yearningest glaze to my eyes.
My hands over my eyes?
It is said that the body doesn't remember pain.
So?
So you only have to go through this once.
This is
very interesting. Waiting 5 minutes to think of the next stage.
No, I can see you through my hands.
As I'd suspected.
Something is happening to me. Or the room is occupied. I can hear my own heartbeat in my ears. I discover myself in that instant, an outward, inward motion, and like my own coursing pulse, I move in my senses as they expand, unfolding, cracking and streaming, spilling yolk, fluid, rivers, eyes staring back at me in the theatrical darkness. Crossing the void, I look inside the spectators' minds. and crystallize instantly at the periphery of the vanishing point, gaining speed that lifts me, beating, beating wings, flight now, soaring away. I'll be right back. Inside the house, in the living room, is a painting on the feminine wall of a house, split open on the side. Looking into the living room, with an eye on the wall, and the eye is a painting of a house, with a picture window showing a living room, with a painting on the wall, of a living room, with a long Edwardian love seat, under a chandelier, glowing gray, casting shadows across the mahogany table, at where I sit, covering my eyes. I'll only say it once. I can see.
What followed the lab scene was a series of flash cuts of Linda and I on the stairs with her sweater coming off so she's totally nude. And then there's these close-ups of throats and shoulders and intertwining mouths and subliminal-like flashes of me looking up there at that actress in my arms from out in the basement. And I've just gotten this orange juice from the barmaid in a leather bikini, but I feel tight in the groin and heavy in the gut, cramps. I get a picture of a jackknife off a diving board. My jeans are tight. But up there in front of me on the screen, Linda's undone my dress and it's fallen to my shoulders and my hands and her mouth are rapturously at work and there's an approving murmur from the men sitting around me and my swallow sticks in my throat.
One, aside. The formula works to progress the eye's vision forward to the time when the flaming sword shall be given up, when the divisions are unified. Two, this is about seeing everything at once. Three, something to do with getting rid of Tom. Hey, Tom, hey, look, why don't you go upstairs and see what Valerie's doing? This is my favorite part because it involves the actual projection of a vision. This is something that we have tried to prepare you for, but when you get down to the moment itself, it's up to you. It's up to you. This is sparse. Now, notice when it appears to break, it doesn't really. It does something, but I just can't remember what. It has something to do with the city. Oh, I hate this with all my guts. It begins with the sky turning rust and the winds of the city drawn still. There is a moist animal scent in the air. Everyone notices it, that and the heat, which seems to have fallen suddenly from the heaven. A stifling oven. Stillness. In the late afternoon, a gentle but uncomfortably warm breeze shifts in, and from the sky they come then. Red flakes fall and are examined. They prove to be muscle, finely shaved. At about dusk, the first liquid appears.
And then instantly my fangs are on her throat and Linda's mouth opens in shock. I sink in and the blood actually slams against the roof of my mouth, slams so hard it rings my ears and I slurp it in and use the fangs again to rip the hole wider and a stream of the old red stuff drools down between her breasts across her belly, collecting in a pool in her navel. I follow it with my tongue.
And then when I'm a smile, 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 smile,
smile, smile, smile, smile, smile, smile, progressive interlocking fiction, wiping out each detail of awareness, replacing it smoothly. Life, mirror, mirror, life. I give up.
Behind me in the translucent darkness.
And I held her soft, long, and innocent.
The image is delicate, the position peril.
I heard my name whispered, and there was Valerie.
The power of her lifeblood churning inside me.
The laboratory is a gray chamber under the skin.
Her eyes closed, arms outstretched.
Turning me warm throughout.
Naked as a dream reaching for me.
I sit in my chair in the upstairs room.
Drops of red at the corners of her mouth.
From her gorgeous wound.
Then someone kicked the front door in. I dove toward Valerie and covered her with my body.
Sure, I romanticized.
And I go to the balcony.
We fell to the floor, dodging the first shot.
But can you hear the transcendence crackle like a campfire?
Flesh and image. Project.
Valerie!
Valerie!
That in the heat.
I'm really wrecked.
Teeth.
My daughter.
Daddy.
Naked light passing over.
Naked light.
Is that your name?
I think I'm in love.
I'd have never believed it.
See? See?
See, in the club, see, Valerie was there for me. I was the one told her to go see the movie. I couldn't go with her, had a job, extra bucks, run an errand for a friend. Well, Big George, you know. I borrowed my cousin's car, see? But she's sitting there in that crowded corner, and she is becoming aware of this extraordinary sensation coming out of her sexual organs. She's not taking an eye off herself up there on that movie screen, though, until the first reel ends. See, it's one of those tiny movie clubs, and they have to change reels. The lights come up on the club, and her pupils contract dizzily. Instantly, she is aware that, as incongruous as it might sound, she has an erection. She is afraid someone might notice. Now, it is at this moment at the bar the crowd assumes the posture of being horror-stricken. There is a sudden, grisly thumping on the ceiling. A woman in faded jeans, hair tied back in a bun, University of Louisiana sweatshirt, big bag on her shoulder, exclaiming, "It's horrible!" And a man with a red-specked umbrella held low, crying out, "I'd have never believed it!" They are staring at the door to the street. A man in a three-piece suit in the doorway, completely saturated with blood. On his brow, a strand of gristle. You can still see hair on it. Standing in the doorway, gaping, and he lets out this. And the audience in the club forget the movie in their rush for the exit. But outside, what they're heading for outside, they're not prepared. Outside, the sky is raw meat, spurting gushes of blood mixed with chunks of flesh. Why, the very language I use is meager compared to the reality outside. Then the lightning strikes the overturned Thunderbird in the swamp, and the exposed gas tanks explode in sheets of flame, in turn igniting the $5,000 worth of fireworks in the trunk. Valerie awakens to the noise. Her room is lit in green fire. She rises and floats to the window to see the light at a short distance away out there in the swamp. She hears the creak of the rocking chair overhead and knows that Charlie's up with his shoeboxes again. She decides that she is thirsty. She makes up her mind to go down to the cellar for a drink before she goes back to sleep. Me? What happened to me? Well, it was pretty obvious I couldn't go back to the city, what with the fuck-up with the fireworks and all. So I had my folks wire me some money and headed west. Ended up in Palo Alto. Got a job giving hearing tests. And so on. Same old story.
Thank you.